The Guardian.
Hello, and thanks for downloading. I'm Sean McGinty, and I'm your host for the Guardian Social Enterprise Network podcast. This is podcast number two. So here's the idea. We supply with news, information and opportunities in the social enterprise sector, and you, the listener, get involved by going to guardian.co.uk/social-enterprise-network, where we'll read your comments and we'll reflect them in future programmes. We welcome your emails to me at seanmcginty.co.uk for any podcast thoughts, or to the network editor david.mills@guardian.co.uk if you want to get involved with the network. You can, of course, find us on Twitter, @GuardianSocKent. And views on any of the items you hear today or suggestions for future topics would be gratefully received. Coming up, the big society and social enterprise, a toxic link.
I think the question now is, has it served its purpose for social enterprises? And has it stopped being a help and actually started to become more of a hindrance?
More from communications consultant Simon Francis a little later. Also in this month's podcast, imagine this man in your office asking for business.
Hang on, have a look at your company and see how many apprenticeship opportunities you can open up.
That's the chief executive of Birmingham-based social enterprise Enter, and we'll have their interesting take on doing business with big corporates after we've had the news.
The Guardian.
This is the Guardian Social Enterprise Podcast. I'm Sean McGinty, and here's the news. One of the big stories of the last month must be the progress of the Public Services Social Value Bill, which passed through the House of Commons on a quiet Friday at the end of November. Some amendments were lost because of the lack of government backbenchers in the House on a Friday. More on that later. But Chris White MP is responsible for taking it through the House, and he hopes when enacted into law, it'll be an opportunity for the whole of the third sector.
We spend something about $236 billion in goods and services in the public sector last year. Some of this pot's going to be opened up to our voluntary sector and our charities and our social enterprises.
Business studies students in Scotland will now get the opportunity to learn about the business and social benefits that flow from the social enterprise movement. The Scottish Qualifications Authority will introduce the topic into new Level 4 and 5 business studies curricula in 2014. Sandra Ewan is the schools manager for the Scottish Social Enterprise Academy.
The benefit for young people is that they get to see the complete model of business, because very much the business curriculum has centred on private business as a model, and very often people find it very confusing, teachers and young people, to distinguish between what social enterprise does in relation to private business and charities, and they particularly confuse social enterprises and charities, and they don't see social enterprise as a model where people actually make profit and then reinvest that profit to help other people.
Undergraduates in Brighton are turning to social enterprise to improve the standard of student digs. This comes following a survey by the Students' Union, which found that their members are often unhappy with the accommodation they live in while at university. High fees and poor communication from letting agents are some of the top gripes. It'll be called Sussex Student Lettings and won't charge students for a fee for finding them somewhere to live. For more information, go to sussexstudent.com/rateyourlandlord. Right, let's get down to business. Now, Enter, the Birmingham Social Enterprise, began life as a training provider. It was one of the first of its kind in the city. Years spent working on partnerships in the public sector have borne fruit. But now Enter's chief exec, Kevin Hayes, says that social enterprises need to show the private sector that a combination of corporate responsibility, financing opportunities and trading can work for both parties. Here's an example.
2.5 years ago, we moved into some new premises, and we moved our construction centre into an industrial unit beside us, and we wanted to kit it out. We were in the process of kitting it out, and we stumbled across an organisation called Lendlease that actually were looking for a community group that actually were doing some project work, and yeah, they wanted to support through their corporate social responsibility. So we got in contact with them, and cutting a long story short, they actually eventually kitted out our all the tools for our construction centre, and they were delighted to do that because they knew obviously that all the youngsters who used those that kit, them tools, would be getting trained, would be going on to apprenticeships, and so on. And they also gave us, when they realised we made garden furniture in the construction area, they said, "Oh well, we've got one of these schools and we've got to buy furniture from somebody for the gardens." So we made benches and seats and, you know, garden boxes, flower boxes.
Right,
and a gazebo and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so it wasn't just a question of sort of, you know, taking the corporate social responsibility money. It was also a question of then trading with Lendlease.
Absolutely. I think that's what struck us, that, obviously private sector are looking for reasons for doing corporate social responsibility, but actually trading is the big thing. And, you know, we then said to them, look, we've got a conference centre here, we've got a nursery, we've got a cafe, we've got outside catering facilities. We'd like you to use all of this, because when you're doing that, you're not only sort of, you know, getting the service you want, you actually are putting something back. Now, we market all that now. We've realised, actually, look, if we're doing sort of catering, we call it catering with a conscience, and we can do the quality and we can hit the price, but actually we're saying to people, but the extra bit you get is, you know, it's your social conscience. You're actually putting something back into this community here.
But Enter's chief executive, Kevin Hayes, says that CSR and trading is not enough. He wants more. What about the supply chain? And how about helping young people too?
I mean, you take Lendlease, for instance. I mean, when they do a project building a school or something like that, they've got a few of their core staff, but they use subbies all the time, subcontractors. So we're saying, okay, how do we get hold of your subbies? Can we get involved with, you know, your subcontractors? Because I'm not only just wanting to trade with them, I'm wanting them to open up job opportunities. And I'm trying to educate them as well. I'm saying to them, like, you know, how many young people do you employ, you know, through apprenticeships and so on? And they're going, we got graduates and all that, like, you know.
Sure, yeah.
I'm saying, hang on, have a look at your company and see how many apprenticeship opportunities you can open up, because that's the future. You've got to pick up these 16 to 25-year-olds that are not going to go to university and that. Like, you've got to open up the doors for these kids.
That's Birmingham-based social enterprise Enter and the chief executive, Kevin Hayes. We'll hear more from them in the coming months on the Guardian Social Enterprise podcast. Any thoughts or comments, or you want to find out more about companies or people on this podcast, please go to guardian.co.uk/social-enterprise-network, where we'll read your comments and reflect them in future programmes. So, unless you've been living in a social enterprise-free hole in the ground for the last 12 months, you'll know that the Conservative MP for Warwick and Leamington, Chris White, is steering a private member's bill through Parliament. It aims to put social value at the heart of commissioning across the public sector. I asked him what three things he hopes the bill achieves.
The first thing would be to ensure that social value is taken into account at the pre-procurement stage. The second thing would be that it is what, you know, has been done in some places is going to be across the board, so it's going to be universal. And the third thing is that I think, considering we spend something about $236 billion in goods and services in the public sector last year, some of this pot's going to be opened up to our voluntary sector and our charities and our social enterprises.
Now, overall, do you see in your work and your research and, you know, all the information you've seen on this subject regarding local authorities, do you think overall local authorities are positive about this, or are they a bit scared?
I think overall they are positive. I think that this is something they really want to do. They want to be helped through this phase. It's obviously going to be a bit of a change in direction, but I think our local authorities really want to work with our communities, and I think this will be a tool to help them do that.
What are the chances of getting this through before March 2012? That's the deadline to get it through the Lords now, isn't it?
I'm very confident that it can be done before that time. Obviously, you know, I've got a certain amount of control about what happens in the Commons. The Lords is another place, but I think the goodwill across parties that this has created will give this the momentum to get through before the time.
Do you see councils as being commissioning bodies, or do you see a more direct relationship perhaps between, you know, the top and the centre and the very bottom and the delivery, if you like?
No, I think our councils have a terrific role to play. This is our councils are as local as you can get. They understand what's going on the ground. They understand communities' needs, and they're dealing with the social enterprise, the charities, the voluntary bodies locally on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's where the sort of local knowledge can really come into play.
Now, there are some people that are very passionate about this subject, social enterprise. In the Commons, do other MPs share the passion?
Yeah, very, very, very much so. I think this is primarily how we got cross-party support, because everybody could see that this was, went under the heading of a good thing, a very positive thing. I think we are much more focused on how we can help our communities, help our charities and our voluntary groups locally, because we understand those. Those are the groups that, when we're in our constituencies, these are the groups we're trying to help. These are the groups that are coming to us with their issues. These are the groups that have sort of said in the past how difficult it is to win contracts. And fundamentally what this bill does is levels the playing field and gives these groups a much greater chance of getting around the table.
What about the amendments that were lost? Is that a problem for you?
No, I think what is maintained, the social value aspect of the bill, is absolutely integral to what we were trying to achieve, what everybody wants to see at the end of the day. How we've got to view this bill is really one step on a journey. How successful it is, how much there's a sort of buy-in, what it actually substantially changes with our communities, how easy it is for these groups to win contracts. We need to see how that works. We need to see how that gets impetus. And I think let's see where we are with what we have.
That's Chris White, MP, and the person with the task of steering the social value bill through Parliament. Again, any thoughts you have will be gratefully accepted. You can tweet us at Guardian Sockent or at Sean A. McGinty. Now, on last month's podcast, we heard from Peter Cousins, MBE from Brighter Future Workshop in Skelmersdale. As well as being on the telly, being a successful lottery bidder and winning the Guardian Social Enterprise Award 2011, he's at the centre of operations on an industrial estate on the many roundabouted West Lancashire town. I went for a visit and began in the workshop where mobility scooters and all manner of helpful equipment for use by disabled people was being saved from landfill and brought back into use.
This is a full refurbishment of a scooter. We break this down, we check everything through technically, and then we slowly build it back up, put it together, so it's totally recycled. Any parts that are broken or damaged, we replace from other scooters that we would break normally. So everything is refurbished.
So did you have these skills before you came to work for Brighter Future Workshop?
My background is engineering. These skills I've acquired here, if anything, but my background is engineering. It's a natural thing that I would do anyway. If it was a car, I would do it with a car. If it was a conveyor, I would refurbish a conveyor. It wouldn't matter to me. It's just a natural progression.
So what do you get out of working here?
Fun. It's enjoyable. It's good to teach the children and people that come through here. It's just enjoyable. I go home with a smile on my face.
And what sort of response do you get from young people that are perhaps doing this sort of thing for the first time?
Amazement. And they look at it and think, well, I couldn't do that. But as they start to realise, as they take things apart and clean things and put them back together, they realise that they can do it, and it's all in stages. And I always tell them, you start from the beginning and you finish at the end. And that's the way we work here.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. I best leave you to it. You look like you're a busy fella.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George.
Funding, as anybody in the voluntary sector knows, funding is very, very difficult. We have been fortunate. We've had part funding from the lottery for the last 2 years. We were in the final for the best environmental project in the country. We are applying again in the next 12 months. Our funding from the lottery will expire. We are hoping for continuation funding, but who knows? It's a lottery.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
From a business point of view, how do you balance between wanting to grow a successful business and achieving the social aims that you've got? How do you balance those things?
We have a very good chairman who's a slave driver and myself at the helm. Every day we look for ways to generate money into the business. But Brighter Future will always put people first. We pride ourselves on people first. Everything we do is for the youngsters, to give them a better life. Because Peter had a very good life. At the peak of his career, he became disabled and was housebound. He had no wheelchair, was on an NHS waiting list, was unemployed because of ill health retirement, and he was housebound for 17 months. And he had the determination to do something to help people with disabilities. And I joined him, and then we've gone from strength to strength with Brighter Future. And we can't see beyond Brighter Future. Brighter Future is here to stay, and we are here to help other people with disabilities, and hopefully with the support from Joe Public and other companies, that Brighter Future will be 100% sustainable before long.
That was Jackie Tittle, the General Manager of Brighter Future Workshop in Skelmersdale, and of course the winner of the Guardian Social Enterprise Award 2011. Now to something at the heart of social enterprise, branding. There's lots of different views on what the movement should now call itself. Does the term social enterprise connect with people and businesses? But at a time when the big society is still on the agenda from the coalition government, there are some that think that sitting social enterprise alongside the big society is a toxic link. One such thinker is communications consultant Simon Francis.
The Big Society, when it was launched by David Cameron, really appropriated social enterprise as kind of one of the key groups of organisations that would actually deliver many of the objectives of the Big Society. And I think to start off with, actually, that was quite a positive link. It certainly, amongst opinion formers and other sort of key groups, really sort of set social enterprise, you know, really on the agenda. But I think the question now is, has it served its purpose for social enterprises? And has it stopped being a help and actually started to become more of a hindrance? Certainly, if you look at kind of the evidence just this week from the Public Accounts Committee, where they've said that the public just don't understand what the Big Society is, they don't know what it means, they don't know, you know, what it's trying to deliver. I think that actually is something that, you know, certainly I've been sort of talking about for quite a long time. It is badly defined. There's no communications program going on behind it, no joined up communications program anyway. And so I think it's just adding sort of a layer of jargon and confusion in the public's minds. Mm. So what I'd suggest is that social enterprises actually need to start breaking free of that. And there have been signs, I think, that social enterprises are starting to do that.
So what's the... Is that a political sort of toxicity? I mean, what is it? Is it because perhaps social enterprises, you know, maybe a little bit left of centre and David Cameron is a little bit right of centre? Is it that that's the problem?
No, I think it's actually more sort of the other way around almost, in that it's for social enterprises. I think they've used the Big Society to fill as much of a purpose as they possibly can get out of it. And I think now it's possibly holding them back. And if people continue just to think that, you know, social enterprises are the Big Society and it's not, you know, social enterprise is actually a much wider movement and a much wider sort of development, I think that if they keep on tacking themselves onto the Big Society then too much, I think it will hold them back, actually. And I think if you look at, so for instance, the recent Society Profits campaign that's sort of starting to be launched as a kind of a sector organisation trying to sort of, you know, make its mark on the media, I think that's absolutely the direction that people need to be heading in. Think of the fair trade movement. That started off as a sort of a charity, as a movement, as a few groups and organisations, and now look at it, it's a massive consumer brand. If you think that actually Society Profits could become a fair trade movement, but for social enterprises, I mean, the potential for that is absolutely enormous.
And from a sort of PR perspective, I mean, that's your business, isn't it? That is, what, an easier message to sell to the general public?
Yeah, it's absolutely a much more consumer-friendly message. It's something that people get more. It's like, you know, I want to buy something because then society will profit as a result of it. And, you know, again, making the fair trade analogy, you know, it says what it does on the tin almost. But I think before organisations perhaps get too involved in kind of, you know, setting off and going and getting involved in society profits, I would recommend, though, that they just take a moment just to think about what it is that they want to achieve out of their media coverage. You see organisations all too often just running headlong into sort of trying to get some coverage for their organisation that can backfire.
Mm.
But I think what I'd say is just make sure that you're set for engaging with the media. I actually mean get set for the media. That stands for strategy, explain, and then target. So think about, from a strategy point of view, what are your business objectives behind this? Who do you want to reach in order to meet those business objectives? And then devise some tactics and to actually reach those people. Explain, you know, ditch all the jargon. You know, people don't really understand what a social enterprise is. That's why, you know, Society Profits is such a great idea.
And let's face it, most of them, they don't care, do they? I mean, it doesn't matter to them.
Exactly. So make it relevant to that audience. And then, of course, when you reach then target, then you've got something relevant to then explain to the journalists, and, you know, make sure you pick the right ones and do your research on them. And I think if you do that, then, you know, you've then got a really good standards of getting coverage for your organisation.
That's communications consultant Simon Francis with his thoughts on the toxicity of linking social enterprise with the big society, and some good PR advice for any business too. He can be followed on Twitter at @Si_Francis. Thanks to Simon Francis and to everybody that got involved in this month's Social Enterprise Network podcast from The Guardian. So here's how you get in touch. You can email me at seanmcginty.co.uk or my editor, david.mills@guardian.co.uk. You can go to guardian.co.uk/enterprise-network and make your thoughts known there on this podcast. And of course, look at all the fabulous news and interviews on there too. Would you want your social enterprise or someone you know with a social enterprise to be featured here? If you do, please get in touch and tell us why. If you're on Twitter, just tweet your thoughts to @GuardianSockEnt, or my personal Twitter is @SeanAMcGinty. Please remember to share us with your friends and colleagues in the usual way. I'm Sean McGinty. Thanks for listening, and see you next time for more news, comment and information from the Guardian Social Enterprise Network. You should join it. It's free.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.